Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Let's go to the United States now, where Donald Trump has issued his latest executive order, this time sanctioning the International Criminal Court over its investigations both into the United States and Israel, which he has described as illegitimate and baseless. Meanwhile, the row over his plan to turn Gaza into the Riviera of the Middle East rumbles on, with critics suggesting he's using the issue to distract from Elon Musk. Musk's increasingly controversial efforts to upend the federal government. Simon Marks is chief correspondent with Feature Story News and is with us now. So, Simon, plenty to talk about here, but let's start with the decision to issue sanctions against the International Criminal Court, which is a show of support for Benjamin Netanyahu. I'm sure you'd agree. He's the subject of an arrest warrant from the court. He was visiting Donald Trump this week. So is that what this is all about?
Well, it's partly about that, Claire. There's no question about that. And you're absolutely right. The fact that it came just a matter of hours after Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli Prime Minister, departed the United States, with the United States, of course, failing to enforce the ICC's arrest warrant. It never was planning to do so, because the United States is not a signatory to the ICC. It's not a member of the ICC. So this is one of those countries that Benjamin Netanyahu can travel to without any risk of being detained. But it's also about protecting, according to Donald Trump, the United States, because there are two issues that have fueled this. On the one hand, Donald Trump's anger about the way in which Prime Minister Netanyahu and his Defence Minister Dov Gallant have been targeted by the ICC. But it's also about efforts by the ICC to hold US service personnel accountable for suspected war crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan. So this executive order places financial restrictions and travel restrictions on key ICC officials and their immediate family members. Those ICC officials are unspecified in the executive order. We don't know who they may prove to be or precisely what sort of process is going to lead to their identification, but it's going to prevent them from engaging in financial transactions that in any way touch America's banking system or US soil. And it's also going to prevent them from securing visas to travel to the United States. The House of Representatives had already passed a bill calling for sanctions to be placed on the ICC. But by doing this, Donald Trump seems to be taking another step to signify American support for Israel's incumbent leader. But it's also taking a step once again, as Donald Trump has done in the past, to try and protect American troops from being subject to ICC investigations about war crimes. Remember that during his first term in office, as a result of efforts that were orchestrated by the man who is now his brand new defense secretary, the former Fox News weekend breakfast anchor, Pete Hegseth, Donald Trump pardoned two Army personnel who were facing charges relating to alleged war crimes committed in Iraq and Afghanistan, charges here in the United States. He also overturned the demotion of a third member of the Army who had similarly been facing accusations of committing war crimes. So this is an effort to clip the ICC's wings even further and to say that if it continues, as Donald Trump suggested in that executive order yesterday, to directly endanger current and former United States personnel by exposing them to harassment and the risk of international criminal prosecution. As a result of all that, he feels the need to act.
Mm-hmm. The German foreign minister in the last few minutes is saying it's not clear what Trump's sanctions on the ICC will mean, but Germany will remain a supporter of the International Criminal Court. Now, This coupled with what he said about Gaza and, you know, this notion that the United States would take Gaza over and create the Riviera of the Middle East, which has garnered so much attention over this week, Simon, there are those who say this is a distraction from what Elon Musk is doing. And we see this morning in the New York Times that the number of staff at USAID will be reduced from 10,000 to 290. And there are some extraordinary stories about how that is being done. Can you tell us a little bit about what's going on there?
Yeah, well, absolutely. And it's taken this city, frankly, several days, I think, even to wake up to the magnitude of what Elon Musk did all weekend and crowed about doing it over the weekend last weekend at a time when Washington's offices and government corridors are largely empty. So Mr. Musk and his young group of cyber experts that he has brought into his so-called Department of Government Efficiency, which, let me remind everyone, is not actually a government department. They all have the rank of special government employees, which allows them for a limited period of time to skirt the most onerous ethical requirements and background checks that government employees of that rank would normally have to go through. They descended last week on both the United States Treasury and the offices of USAID. USAID, by far and away, with a $40 billion of taxpayer money to disperse every year, the biggest single name in the international humanitarian and development assistance game. And Elon Musk essentially has closed it. I mean, there was a standoff in the USAID offices as Musk's team sought to take control of the department's computer systems, including classified information that was contained in them. He eventually succeeded in having the two long-term veterans of USAID who were trying to safeguard those computer systems placed on administrative leave. Musk and his department colleagues then started going through the full list of AID expenditure all over the world. And basically, in Elon Musk's own words, began feeding the entire agency to the wood chipper. So over the course of the last week, USAID has come to a complete standstill. Its employees were all told to stay home. All over the world, thousands of USAID employees and contractors are being told that they must fly home. They're only able to stay in their respective postings if a member of staff, for example, is pregnant or facing health issues, or they've got kids that need to finish out the school year. Otherwise, everyone's coming back. Programs have been halted in midstream, including even programs where people have been, through USAID funding, working with experimental medical devices that have been implanted in them, or working with experimental drugs. Those staff and those programs immediately shut down. So the people who were within those programs currently are scrambling to see what they can do about those experimental devices or experimental drugs that they have been testing as a result of USAID's largesse. Mm-hmm. Notionally, the department continues to exist. Notionally, Secretary of State Marco Rubio is now running it, but it's apparent that they're going to lay off all but about 290 of USAID's 10,000 staff around the world, and to all intents and purposes, the agency dispersing 40% of the world's humanitarian and development assistance money has ceased to exist.
And you mentioned these cyber experts. They've been characterized as young men going into these offices in Washington. And what are they doing? Are they sitting down and talking to people, or are they going in and saying, "You're fired, pack up your desk and leave"?
Well, the young group of cyber experts are Elon Musk's hit team that take control of these government department and government agencies' computer systems for him. They did exactly the same at the United States Treasury last weekend, essentially forcing staff at the Treasury to let them in to the payments system that disperses billions and billions of dollars of government expenditure. Last night, a judge attempted to clip their wings, finally, by saying that they must only be granted read-only access to these systems. They mustn't have the capacity to change anything within the systems. But in some departments and at the Treasury over the last few days, they've been assisted by incoming members of staff that are arriving, having been brought in by the Trump administration. And the anxiety here is that these youngsters, in one of them as young as 19 and one figure in this entourage that Elon Musk has brought to town, had to resign yesterday after a newspaper here revealed that he had a history of posting racist tweets and other social media postings. But this very adept and technically advanced group of IT figures are essentially the battering ram that Musk and his Department of Government Efficiency are using in order to see exactly where the American government is spending money and potentially to control where the American government is spending money. And remember, Elon Musk and his team, these are entirely unelected figures. Donald Trump continuing to leave Elon Musk in a position of unrestrained power, even though he says that the only thing Elon Musk is doing is deciding who should stay, who should go, but ultimately it's up to Donald Trump to agree with his decisions if they're going to be carried out. The other thing that Elon Musk is accused of doing by his critics here is simply ignoring the law. And, I mean, I had a text even last weekend from one Department of Justice employee who said to me, given what was taking place at both the Treasury and the USAID offices, he said, well, why hasn't the FBI arrested Elon Musk? It is clear that what he's doing is illegal. And the answer, of course, to that question is that at the very moment, the first purges of staff were taking place at the FBI. And once the new FBI director, Kash Patel, is confirmed by the Senate and arrives there, there will be even less prospect of laws that people suspect Elon Musk has broken being enforced.
Yeah, and it's the same situation with the Office of Management and Budget, isn't it? Where the new director there is a man called Russell Vought, who's one of the architects of Project 2025. People might be familiar with that. This was a big, huge document that was written in advance of Donald Trump coming back into the White House with all of the measures detailed there that he would take. Can you tell us a little bit about this man? Why he's so controversial? Because some are saying he could reshape the way US government operates.
Yeah, and he's been absolutely avowedly open about his plans. Russ Vought is not only a key member of the team that wrote Project 2025, which of course is largely the plan that is playing out here as Donald Trump gets his hands back on the levers of power. He's also a far-right Christian nationalist who believes that his authority and Donald Trump's authority is divinely granted. He spoke about the prospect of creating so much activity as soon as Donald Trump got back into office that the aim was to spread trauma among federal government workers here. And even before he was confirmed, Russell Vought was being identified by the White House as the central figure in the Office of Management and Budget's decision to send messages to every single federal worker here in the United States. Hundreds and hundreds of thousands of them, I think over 2 million of them, received the so-called fork in the road email that basically said, you've got until February the 6th to resign, and then you can continue to claim pay and benefits until September the 30th. But if you don't resign by February the 6th, you run the risk of later being dismissed by the Trump administration. This has spread shock, fear, despair, trepidation among government workers. A judge very late in the week stayed that order and said that the government has until Monday to produce evidence that this insistence that federal government workers must resign is based in law. But 40,000 of them have already responded and said that they will resign. So In some government departments, you've got people that don't think they're showing up for work anymore because they've resigned as a result of a process that legally is still in play. But he is absolutely determined, like Elon Musk, massively to shrink the size of government, get rid of people that have not shown loyalty to Donald Trump and his Make America Great Again agenda, and replace them with people who have. And creating trauma is a central part of his plan.
In unprecedented times, for sure. Simon Marks, thank you very much. Simon is from Feature Story News, based in Washington.